Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Stephen Preston, administrator at the U.S. Small Business Administration. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Paul Cayatta. Steve, it's my understanding that in an effort to increase the transparency and accountability in small business contracting, SBA and OMB issued a small business procurement scorecard. Could you tell us a little bit more about this scorecard and what it tracks? But more importantly, could you elaborate on the overall federal performance in this area and what lessons are you learning?
Well, you know, just by way of background, the federal government has a mandate. It's not a requirement, but it's a strong mandate to purchase at least 23% of what they buy from small businesses. We're the largest buyer of things in the world, and so this is an important part of providing an opportunity to small businesses. But as I always say, it's not just about fairness, it's about good business, because small businesses are often more flexible, they're often cheaper, they get everything they have. So it's good business to do business with small business. But what we did was the following. We wanted to make sure that we were doing everything we can to help the other federal agencies meet their small business procurement targets, but also hold them accountable and to be honest about how we're doing. And so what we did is we launched a scorecard. Every one of the larger federal agencies has a small business goal, a percentage of their goods and services that they buy that should come from small business. And for also some different types of small businesses, we also have goals. For example, businesses owned by service-disabled veterans, they have goals for that. We were just talking about veterans. What we do now is we rank every federal agency against their goals, and then we also rank them based on the progress they're making to improve their performance. And then once a year, we issue a scorecard. And some people get green if they're doing well and hitting their goals. Some get yellow, and a lot of them have gotten red. All of our views are that, you know, if somebody's not hitting their goal, we have to be honest about it. We're the federal government, and this is a mandate. Let's be honest about it, and if we're not hitting the goal, then let's put a pathway in place to achieve that goal.
Now, Stephen, we talked earlier about reform and accountability. So specifically, what types of reengineering efforts are you embarking to address some basic operational issues such as reducing error rates, reducing backlogs, and reducing decision-making bottlenecks within the organization?
Well, you know, I think probably a very good example of that would be in our lending operations. As I mentioned before, we guarantee bank loans and credit union loans and other private lenders. If we need to make good on that guarantee, effectively what happens is the bank sells the loan back to us and we buy it and then we make good on it. Well, there have been many challenges in that operation. The backlogs have at one point were very, very long. Our policies were confusing. It was difficult for the banks to interact with us. And so we did a number of things. First of all, we made sure to clean up our policies to make sure that they made sense. And then we rewrote all of our standard operating procedures and sent those to the banking community. It doesn't sound very exciting, but in a process like that, you got to make sure that the rule book is clear, and the rule book wasn't clear. And the banks were asking us to make sure that we were crystal clear on how we did these things. Then we actually took a look at how we do the process of purchasing a loan. It's almost like a little manufacturing operation, except, you know, you've got a loan going through it. There were a lot of issues there that needed to be cleaned up to make it more efficient, to make it more consistent, to improve the processes. And then in addition to that, we needed to improve the technology so that we could support the improvement of that process. The next thing we did is we instituted a customer service desk in their processing centers so that the banks would have a place to call if they needed help or had questions. And then the last thing we did was we undertook a very significant retraining program, not only for the people processing the loans, but for people in our field offices. And the reason for that is this. The banks are out there in the field, and our people are out there in the field, and we wanted to make sure that we could have our people go physically to a bank if they were confused about our process, sit down with them, and help them work through it. When we analyzed the bigger problems we had here, one of the biggest problems we had was a lot of the banks were sending in information that was incorrect or incomplete, or they didn't understand the process. So we decided we had to train our people in the field to sit with banks and help them get it right the first time. The other thing we do now is everything is tracked. I know what the backlog looks like. I know how old it is. I know which banks we're having challenges with. I know how much production we're doing. We have metrics on all of these responsiveness and efficiency measures, which we never had before, so that we can actually manage it effectively. And the last thing we did is we told banks that we were going to make the process easier, and if they complied with the new process, we would deliver a promise to them of getting them their money in 45 days. Well, we have done that, and right now we're getting them their money on average in about 25 days.
Wow, that's fantastic.
We're hitting the band promise, and we're getting tremendous kudos from the industry, so we're very excited about that.
Steve, could you tell us about some of the most critical issues that face small business today? And what you're doing to assist them through those issues?
Well, right now, based on what we're seeing in the economy, I mentioned a little earlier that a lot of small businesses, especially those that have vehicle fleets or large facilities, are hurting from the increase in energy costs. Another thing that small businesses have been facing for a number of years, which is so difficult, is the increase in healthcare costs. Many people don't think of the healthcare challenges we have in the country as being a small business issue, but many statistics would show that 70% of our uninsured workforce works for a small business. And the smaller a business is, the less likely they are to offer healthcare. So we have to make sure we understand how to work to improve the healthcare system to allow small businesses to offer to their employees or for those employees to be able to buy directly on a reasonable basis. So for businesses that are specifically impacted by this economy or these cost challenges, we offer a lot of counseling services to help them think through how to address them in their business, how to manage their costs more effectively, how to manage their labor more effectively, how to manage cash flow more effectively, for example. The other thing we're doing right now is making sure that we're doing everything we can to help them get capital they need. If they need working capital to grow or help through a challenging time, to make sure that our guaranteed lending operations are getting to those people and supporting them. Then the last thing I'd say that we're doing probably more so now than ever is making sure that we do everything we can, that the voice of small business is heard on the policy front. We need to make sure that we're advancing the healthcare policy improvements that I mentioned. Right now, exports are very much on the agenda. A lot of people don't realize that almost 30% of our country's exports come from small and medium-sized businesses. So we're working very hard to help people understand that because many of the trade agreements that are being contemplated right now are very good for small business, will open up those markets for them, add new jobs, and help them address the issues they face in the economy today.
So there's certainly a lot of opportunity in the whole world of international trade. You talk about collaboration as well. Could you describe the Resource Partner Program and how it's working to fulfill the mission?
Yeah, specifically in trade, our resource partners in the small business development centers and women's business centers and our partners at SCORE, which is a network largely made up of volunteers, many of those people have specific expertise in foreign trade. And they will sit down with a small business and help them think through what they need to do if they're looking at foreign markets to expand. We also, in conjunction with the Department of Commerce, work very directly with small businesses on exporting to specific countries. So if somebody comes in the door, they can go to a U.S. Export Assistance Center and get help with respect to a particular country. For example, if they want to export to Portugal, we can help them understand that. And then the Department of Commerce actually has resources in Portugal that can help them. The last thing I would say right now is we were kicking off a series of trade symposia around the country. This recently, we had one in Miami, in a town outside of Miami actually called Hialeah. And we had 400 small businesses come to learn more about exporting. We brought small businesses that were successful exporters to speak in a roundtable to share their experiences. I talked about the value of free trade agreements and exports. We had a number of service providers that explained what services they could provide to help them out. We had a number of banks there to help them with their financing issues. It was a very, very exciting day for those businesses, and many of them were really encouraged by the opportunity they have to reach foreign markets. We also do provide financing through our guaranteed programs for small businesses who need to build working capital to support their exports, or if they need export financing for the actual shipments.
So many people may not know that some of SBA's former clients, if you will, included such notables such as Intel, Apple, Amgen, Ben & Jerry's, and Federal Express, just to name a few. Given such success stories and these American icons, could you highlight perhaps, if you can, some up-and-coming success stories that you see in the near future?
Yeah, there's a great one. I mentioned Miami just a second ago, our trade symposium there. I had a chance to visit with an exporter down there who ships products all around the world for installation into industrial kitchens. And he has installed kitchens in throughout Asia, in Latin America. Sometimes you really don't even know what's out there until you actually start seeing these small businesses and what they do. But, you know, he had a familiarity with China 20 years ago, and he set up an operation there and began installing kitchens in hotels that were being built and other industrial kitchens. And then he took it to a number of other countries, and now he's exporting to countries around the world. A couple of months ago, I was in St. Louis, and there were two ladies who had started a business that develops software that blocks hackers from foreign countries who are trying to get into government computer systems. I mean, an incredibly valuable service to our country to protect our security infrastructure. And it was a small business with, you know, 10 or 20 employees that developed this software that's doing so much for our country. So we forget how varied and valuable and innovative so many of these companies are. When you start hearing the stories, I got to tell you, it's just so encouraging. And that's, you know, actually one of the great things about this job is I get to go around the country and meet many of them.
That's exciting. It must give you a great sense of pride to see some of these organizations starting up and doing so well with what is seemingly a very small set of resources.
Well, you know, one of the other things I have the opportunity to do is speak with my counterparts around the world who either lead commerce departments or small business departments in other governments. And frequently, people will say, well, how do you do it in America? Do you, you know, how come your small business culture is so energetic and so rich and it drives your economy? What should we do? And they look at I tell them about our programs and I tell them about our policies. But then, you know, I stop and I say, but small business is in our DNA. That's who we are as a country. We are an entrepreneurial culture. Kids grow up many times thinking about owning a business. They join Junior Achievement. They go to college and they take courses on entrepreneurship. Many of our best-known Americans started out as small business owners that they built into big businesses. And so it's so important that we have policies in our country that support the small business owners, that support the people that have a dream and want to build that dream, because it is the backbone of our economy. It drives innovation and competitiveness for our country around the world.
That's fantastic. So what does the future hold for SBA? We will ask Stephen Preston, administrator at the U.S. Small Business Administration, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.